Hi there. Do you have any books on how to get rid of ghosts?
Have you tried telling them you're ready for a commitment?
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Oh, like a relationship.
Exactly. That'll send them running, huh?
Oh, I like her.
Here you go. Maybe this'll help.
I gotta give you credit. I was saying on the end of the last show, I went to that haunted brewery in Georgia, so that was all you. Thank you for recommending it.
Oh, and yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, I heard the thanks at the tail end of your last show. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
How was it?
It was good. The food was great. You really had there wasn't any sort of like you had to go with if you're gonna go and get the ghostly experience. You had to go with like the ghost tour people. Savannah's a really interesting place. You ever been there?
No. I had read about it, and I'm like, hey, because I've not been there before. So
you'd like it a lot, I think. Yeah, I think you'd like it a lot. They say it's the most haunted city in the South, and there's like a million ghost tours to the point where I didn't actually go on a ghost tour because there was too many to choose from, and it was like, oh, I don't want to. I was kind of. How it all came down to, like, every night. It's like, I don't want to walk around for 90 minutes and hear, because you don't know if you're going to get a good one or a bad one. And to me, it was, I'm too cynical at this point. But I did go to the haunted brewery, which was, what's it called here? I don't even have it in front of me, but it's Moon River Brewery. And apparently they've had a ghost show there or something like that.
Yeah, I like haunted breweries. There's one in close to where I'm sitting right now, about 45 minutes away in Weston, Missouri, and there's some nice ghost stories there. And the best part about it is there's all sorts of free samples at the end.
That's a good deal. But I did go into the basement where they have it's like unfinished or whatever. It's like how it was originally, you know? So you get to walk around. That was the cool part. Like, they take you up to the second floor, and they take you in the basement. They let you look around, but they don't tell you anything. They're just the waiter. You know what I mean? So, like I said, it lets you go with a ghost tour. The waiter's just like, all right, you can go down to the basement. That's pretty much what he said. He was a really cool guy and everything, but he's like, you can get down to the basement whenever you want, look around. And you just get down there, and it's just like a dirty old basement. So.
Well, yeah, that's fine. I like dirty old basements. I'm not going any farther with that.
Yeah, I was going to say you set yourself up there for
on the subject of breweries. I think we need to make a promise here that in case the zombie apocalypse happened, that you and me meet in North Carolina, because I recently read that North Carolina has more microbrews. Per area than any other state. So sounds like the perfect place to ride it out.
Yeah. All right. I can you make it that far in a zombie apocalypse?
Dude, I wrote the book on how to survive this stuff. I can make it.
Oh, wow. All right. That's a bold stance. I like that. Now I feel bad. Like, I undersold this brewery, though, but the food was outstanding and the beer was great, and I highly recommend it. So, I was foolish to not bring a ghost expert with me, really, is the point of it, you know. But it was cool. It was eerie in the basement and stuff. And the upstairs was spooky, too. But these ghost tours, I don't know. Have you ever been on a ghost tour?
Yeah, I've been on a couple. And, you know, in research for a couple of my ghost books, I've been on ghost tours. And, I mean, they're for people who are interested in ghosts, and you hear nice history, which is good. You get to see some creepy places, and at the end they what the hell do you call them? I'm having serious problems thinking about words tonight. Dowsing rods. They bring out dowsing rods, and you get to let those wave around.
Where was this?
Oh, Hannibal, Missouri.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, they did that in St. Louis as well when I went to the Limp Mansion. And, you ever interviewed a dowser?
No, I've never spoken with a dowser. I don't know how much I could get out of a dowser. That doesn't sound like a two-hour show.
I don't think it is a two-hour show.
Yeah.
But I've interviewed a couple of dowsers who, you know, are just really convincing that, you know, this stuff works and it's real. And, you know, I've discovered this, and this with dowsing rods. Here, you try it. Okay. I'm holding two metal sticks.
Yeah.
And they're not moving.
Yeah, it seems like the kind of thing you either have to be like, there's some sort of level of skill or something involved if they're that convinced. I don't know. It's confusing to me. It would be tough radio, too, because you can't see the dowsing rod or anything. So it's like, well, I'm supposed to imagine it. How does it look right now?
Well, that's what you got to do. Radio like they did back in like the 1930s. You have to describe every single thing.
And I'll have to be there.
Listen to those old broadcasts?
Yeah, yeah. very tough stuff, dowsing. I don't know.
All right.
Like I said, I don't know if I could really get a full show out of it. It seems kind of unless I could talk to like an expert on dowsing. You know, then they could tell you how long it's been around and all that stuff, but I don't know.
Yeah, dowsing is one of the quite a few, you know, aspects of the paranormal that I think are just complete bullshit.
Yeah.
Dowsing, until somebody can prove me wrong, is in that realm.
Wow.
So I'm not saying it's, you know, hey, I want somebody to convince me. If dowsing's real, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Psychics, I used to think all psychics were complete crap until I met a couple who told me things that just absolutely blew my socks off.
Yeah.
Because I was completely convinced all of that was BS. There was one, I went to a spiritualist convention because you know why? It was there. And I wanted to interview people.
Yeah.
And I was interviewing this spiritualist leader. I'm like, how do you become a spiritualist? And she said, well, people are born into it. Like you were born, you know, into the Methodist Church. So, you know, you're a Methodist. And some people change, like your mom, who was Catholic, and she, you know, met your dad, and they got married, and she converted to become a Methodist.
And you obviously didn't tell her all this stuff.
I gave you that dead silence for a reason.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I had in response to that woman.
Yikes.
She said it so matter-of-factly, like, you know, she knew it 100, that was 100% accurate, and it was.
Well, the way she said it, too, is like in a way that she's not trying to convince you because she knows that it's true. Like, yeah, she's certain of it. That's the spooky part, too.
Yeah, yeah, and she was absolutely right. I mean, this is the Midwest. I mean, she would have gotten a better, you know, better luck calling, saying that I was a Baptist. I mean, if she was just taking a shot in the dark, than a Methodist. But no, I mean, she completely nailed that. Yeah, mom was Catholic. Wow.
How did you did you like say, whoa, that's amazing, or did you kind of play it cool and you were like, so, you know?
I play everything cool.
Oh, good answer. Good answer. Oh, you stumped me on that one. Oh, man. So dowsing. You don't believe in dowsing? I don't know anything about dowsing. Jim Vuvovich says dowsing supposedly works because your subconscious moves the sticks by moving your muscles without your conscious input. The rods are like the needle on a gas gauge, measuring input to your subconscious. That's his opinion, he says, his 2 cents.
Well, I'm not saying that dowsing doesn't work. I'm just saying it sounds, you know, it sounds like it shouldn't work because people for centuries have been finding water with dowsing rods.
Yeah, that's kind of the big thing, right? That's sort of like their claim to fame.
Yeah, yeah, it is, but they also find other things. There's a guy here in town. I'd come home. I had the day off work, and I was at home alone, and I noticed there was somebody in my front yard, and the truck was from the city. I'm like, what the hell is he doing here? And he walked around for a bit, then he went back to his car, and he pulls out a dowsing rod.
What?
He starts walking through my yard with a dowsing rod. So I go out and talk to the guy, and I end up interviewing him for a story that I'd written. And you know, he works for the city mainly in the, you know, water department, but he also does stuff out at the cemetery. And if he cannot find a water line the accepted way, he pulls out his dowsing rod and he says he finds it every single time.
Weird.
And out at the cemetery, there's a lot of unmarked graves, and he said he's found, you know, located dozens of them just by using his dowsing rod.
Ugh, God. What's he looking for unmarked graves for?
Oh, so they can mark them.
Unknown?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that the genealogist might be able to nail down who they are. It's genealogy's really big here.
Interesting, interesting. Genealogy is big everywhere all of a sudden in the last few years. It's kind of the internet and everything. Bod. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
I forget how we even got on dowsing in the first place, but yeah. Most haunted.
I just threw us completely off topic.
I don't mind it, because that's probably the most we've ever talked about dowsing on the show ever. So that'll satisfy sort of the Wikipedia-like aspect of the program where
all right,
someone's
score.
Like, you guys never talked about dowsing. I can be like, Jason Offit, season 9, check it out. Then they'll listen to it and be like, jeez. But
he called it bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be like the Bernie Mooney. He'll be like, oh, listen, you guys don't know shit about dowsing. He'll be like, oh, sorry, dude. We're just having a conversation. Oh, most haunted city in America, Savannah, though. I would check it out again. It was a nice place. You'd like it. Food was good. Lots of nice drinking establishments. Very compact. You can really kind of do the whole city in a 3-day weekend if you wanted to. So.
I've heard positive things. I've never been, and I think maybe New Orleans would argue with Savannah about being the most haunted city in the South.
All right. Well, I'll let those two fight it out. Oh man. Let me see what else I got here on my list of off-it topics.
You know, we don't have cities fight enough. We need. And you know, as a matter of fact, I've always wanted to get Nebraska and Oklahoma pissed off at each other. You know, Kansas would disappear. I want to see big geographic areas in the United States just have fist fights.
I like the idea of breaking California up into 5 states. I don't know if you've seen that whole theory. Some important rich guy was the one pushing it. I think the guy behind Tesla, the Tesla car or something like that.
All right. Well, yeah, well, it's understandable. I mean, because LA gets, you know, it's the most populous, but I mean, the different areas. I mean, you've got farming areas that get completely ignored.
Mm.
So, yeah, break it up into 5 states, I think that would be fine.
Yeah, because it's got the size like of its own country. You could even do that with some of these other states, like Texas and stuff like that, but they probably wouldn't do it. But California seems radical enough to try it.
they would, and Alaska's big enough to break into a few states, but I think when I was researching Alaska, there's like 1.2 people for every square mile, and most of that population is in Anchorage.
Oh, so, yeah, it's all like barren wasteland.
Yeah, everything is just empty, which is fine for monsters.
I had a buddy, I think he went up there for something and for a while. And he told me it seems like a place where people go to escape from life. You know. So if you ran afoul of the law, you can probably head up to Alaska, and it'll be a while before anyone really even comes looking for you.
Or, well, they probably would give up. Where do you think he went? Alaska? Screw it.
Right, yeah.
Let him stay.
Yeah. Nowadays, it's tough. It's hard to run from the law. That's why we need to get into some more of these death hoaxes and see if anyone's... Because the ones that you hear about them, but they're people who pull them off but then fail at the end. Where, like, he faked his death and lived in Florida for 5 years, and it's like, how did what?
Which, those are great stories, and you even see some that, you know, people who faked their death, and it was 15 years later they busted him. How did they screw up if they've hidden for 15 years?
That's, I don't know, telling it's people, like, getting drunk and telling somebody.
that's...
That's usually how most big crimes are foiled.
Well, yeah, I've interviewed enough cops and asked them the same question, and they've all answered the same way, and the question is, how do criminals get caught? And the answer is, they're stupid. The smart ones don't get caught. The stupid ones, they get caught. I'm still waiting for D.B. Cooper to show up.
There's a dude who's doing some good work on that. I don't have his info in front of me because he just brought it up, but, yeah, there's a guy, he used to be on Coast to Coast a lot talking about it. He seems like he's pretty close to nailing that one down. But it's too bad. I've been in this for like 10 years. I can't think of too many big stories that have ever really been settled except for the Deep Throat thing. That got resolved in the last like 10 years or so. So that's kind of one mystery that really wasn't even a really that cool a mystery that we find out the answer to.
Well, but the only reason we found out the answer to is because the guy was dying from cancer and he admitted it on his deathbed.
Right.
Which is something, let's talk, okay, let me bring up deathbeds. I think there have been a lot of, nice deathbed confessions a couple about Roswell that I can think of off the top of my head,
yeah,
where people are dying and they're like, yeah, this really happened. Okay, what's their motivation for saying that? They're not trying to get famous. They're not trying to make money. They're not trying to get a book deal. They're going to die in a week.
Yeah.
You know, if they weren't serious, why the hell, why would they say anything?
Aren't deathbed confessions considered more potent than any kind of witness testimony? Isn't that some kind of legal thing?
Wow, I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure it is. Some listener will. This is a lot. This program's a lot of I'm pretty sure it is discussion. So, but we're
all right.
Yeah.
I don't want concrete facts. Damn it! I want to talk about stuff that's fun.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. I don't know. Of course, yeah. Why would they make it up if they're just dying anyway? It's like, yeah, because the skeptics are like, their idea is like, oh, they just wanted to impress people that they had an important life. It's like, I don't even know if you care at that point. You got to be pretty shallow at that point. You're dying, and you're like, I just want to make sure everyone knows that I'm really cool, and just to prove it, I saw an alien in 1940, and I can finally tell you about it, so you'll all remember me fondly. It's like, Jesus, dude, get a grip.
Well, I interviewed one of these guys. I got a cryptic email message. The guy was, you want to talk about Roswell? I'm like, okay. And after, you know, about five or six emails back and forth, I finally got this guy's phone number, and I talked with him, and there was nothing on, I mean, I guess I could have, you know, done an email lookup if I really wanted to be an investigator to find out this guy's name, but I didn't. And he was adamant that he didn't want his name at all, and he gave me a, you know, a fake name. I think it was Marty. Wouldn't even give me a fake last name. He just wanted the fake first name. And he told me a story about when he was a kid, his dad, who'd been in the Army, a buddy of his who was still in the Army, you know, was going to be into town, and he wanted to meet. So they met at this guy's hotel that was across the street from a bus station. And the two friends were, you know, were sitting around having a beer at this table, talking. And this guy was sitting. I mean, he's an old man now. I guess they didn't have TVs in hotel rooms at that point. So he was just sitting at the end of the bed listening. And his dad stopped at one point. He says, "Don't pay attention to this." Well, of course, the kid's going to pay attention to it. And they were talking about, you know, the crash at Roswell, and, you know, this guy had been there and, you know, seen the bodies and all this other stuff. And this kid said, he said, my dad made me promise never to say anything, and I'm dying, so I'm finally going to say it. You know, he was looking for no accolades whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this. I think I talked about this with Jim Mars. I don't recall, though, exactly. Maybe even Stan. But it's like, at what point do you reach the tipping point with this stuff? It's very frustrating if you've been in it for a long time, because you've heard these stories a million times. It's like, Jesus, what's it going to take? But, you know, like I said, we're late into the in the game on trying to get to the bottom of these things.
Well, yeah, the Roswell thing is, I mean, everybody there's dead, and if not, they're really close. Everybody who saw anything, because it was so long ago. And it's you know, I hate to say this, but it's the government. It's, you know, if they swooped in, which it sounds like they probably did, and, you know, spirited everything away, it's going to take them to say, okay, you know, the Mogul balloons and, you know, all this other stuff that we told you, yeah, well, we lied.
Yeah.
You know, which isn't going to happen.
And then it goes back to the whole idea we talked about before, where no matter what they say, no one's going to really believe anything, because everyone's so cynical about all this, especially the people in the paranormal can be cynical about it. Mainstream people who are, they just want an answer, they'll believe it, you know what I mean? They'll be like,
yeah,
there, thanks, now I don't have to be thinking about all this UFO business anymore.
Yeah, it's like, there's a similar case in Missouri. It was in 1941 between Cape Girardeau and Sykeston, Missouri, which is in the southeastern part of the state, way down low, really, really close to Tennessee. But there was a crash in 1941. Two different people have talked about this, and everybody's, you know, from there is dead because it was in 1941. So anyone old enough to have been there is gone. I did interview one woman who was investigating it, and it started out with her dad worked for the Army Air Corps, because we didn't have the Air Force back in 1941. It was the Army Air Corps, and there was a base down in southern Missouri, and she was just doing research on him, and he had gotten mixed up into this crash. He had gone to it, and she found some evidence and interviewed a guy he served with who was in his 80s or 90s in an old folks' home, and he was talking about these, you know, this crash of this saucer with these little bodies. And all of the records from every agency that, you know, handled it, the Army Air Force Base, from the fire departments to the police to the sheriff, all of them from that year are destroyed. So that sounds pretty cool, but where can you go with this? The records are gone, and all the people are dead.
Yeah, it's tough. There's no, I don't know where, I'm confounded by the UFO thing in general. You know, it confounds me because the photos are no good anymore, film's no good. We have millions of cases, but they don't seem to be very good either, or at least as far as doing anything with them. You know what I mean? There's like,
right.
Like Peter Davenport collects hundreds of cases a year. Unless someone's synthesizing the data like I've pushed endlessly on this show, I don't see what else you can get out of all this stuff.
Well, that's the problem. You can't. And it's just like the Bigfoot thing with UFOs. I mean, we need Klaatu and Gort to land on, you know, in the mall in Washington, D.C.
Mm.
That's what it's going to take.
Yeah. Well, do you – here's a sort of interesting question. You're older than I am. Do you – I don't know why I'm laughing, but do you –
You'll get here, buddy. You'll get here.
I know. Yeah. I anytime I can find someone older than me, I have to point it out so I feel better about myself. That's really what's going on. But you're older than me. I don't know exactly how much older, but you're definitely older than me. So have you sort of like come to that existential like sort of moment? I've sort of done this in the last year or so where it's like, listen, I'm 36. I got into this when I was 26. I'm crossing sort of this threshold where I may not get any answers to all this stuff. Like when I was younger, it was like, I've got my whole life ahead of me. Chances are that some of this will be solved. Now here it is like 10 years later, and I'm like, well, I still have a good portion of my life ahead of me, but based on the last 10 years of people trying to solve this and just the state of the world, I'm growing skeptical that I'll be able to see any resolution to this stuff.
Yeah. I'm there. I remember when I was a kid, I remember, you know, reading about the Mayans and the Mayan calendar, and I'm like, I'm going to be alive for that. And it you know, it's gone now, and I'm like, yeah, what the hell else is going on in my life? But yeah, the all of this paranormal stuff I've been interested in forever, I'm not going to see any resolution. I don't think I will. I mean, if I do, I mean, with what you were talking about with the Bigfoot in the freezer.
Yeah.
At that point, when they first announced it, I'm like, shit, I'm finally going to see it.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And yeah, and then the bottom fell out. I think I've come to peace with the only two things that might be resolved in my lifetime are if, you know, just like on Harry and the Hendersons, some family in a station wagon hits a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Okay, if that accidentally happens, I might see Bigfoot solved. Most likely, the only thing I'm going to see solved in my lifetime is somebody's going to capture a thylacine in Australia. The Tasmanian tiger that was hunted to extinction, and the last one died in the Hobart Zoo in 1938. People still see those. So although that was, you know, it was declared extinct in 19-whenever, that can still possibly be around.
Hmm.
That's not nearly as exciting as Bigfoot, but that's what I'm hanging my hat on.
Well, they just, in Myanmar this week, they actually just found, like, a bird that was supposedly extinct since 1941, so anything's possible.
Well, and they do this stuff all the time. They're always finding these new animals, usually like bugs and, you know, fish and birds, but sometimes they find a mammal they didn't know existed.
Yeah.
You know, they're not, you know, 9 foot tall and weigh 500 pounds and smell like a skunk, but, you know, I still got a little hope.
It's maddening, too, when you think about it, because it's like they spot this little bird, but this giant Bigfoot creature, they still can't get their hands around. It's like, Jesus, how the Bigfoot should be more difficult. I mean, it should be easier to find than a little bird. But, they just go because, you know, people are reporting a little bird. They go and they're like, hey, here's a little bird. She's like, geez, dude, why can't Bigfoot be this easy to work with?
Well, and that's my opinion's changed over the years. I mean, when I first started getting interested in this, you know, Bigfoot was a North American ape. UFOs were piloted by extraterrestrials from some other galaxy. Ghosts and other, you know, paranormal entities were, you know, spirits of the dear departed. And the more time goes by and the more we haven't solved things and the more changes that happen with the different phenomena, I'm really convinced that none of those things are generally true. You know, I would still like, you know, for unidentified, UPAs or UAVs. Unidentified aerial phenomena, I think that's what started the government in Britain started calling them. You know, I'd still like to think that those are from Alpha Centauri or, you know, Sirius or some other place, but they might not be. They could be from, you know, our neighborhood. You know, whenever Mac Tonies wrote his book on crypto-terrestrials, I'm like, you know, I don't really believe that there's another civilization that could live here, but that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, we live in a really weird world. It's really connected, but at the same time, it's really disconnected. A lot of people don't talk to each other about this stuff, you know? You used to get these emails all the time. You still get them from people with these stories, like these crazy stories. We did a whole show back a while ago. I was telling somebody about it, like, a few weeks ago. I was just talking about that Fae Girl story that you talked about on the show last time you were on.
That was a great story, yeah.
I know. Folks, check that one out from the last time Jason was on. But do you still get these emails from people with strange stories, or as you kind of slowed down, do you not get as many?
Exactly. As I've slowed down, I don't get as many. But I still get some. Generally, they're Black Eyed Kid and Shadow People. Every once in a while, I'll get a nice time travel story because, like I said, I'm still interested in that, and I still talk about that quite a bit.
Was there anything that's blown your mind recently that you've heard, through someone who's reached out to you? Because that's the kind of stuff that other people wouldn't even know about. I know I'm putting you on the spot with that one, but
yeah, you are. I mean, completely blown my mind. not really.
Folks gotta start sending more crazy stories to Jason.
I guess. I mean, the last one that really, it really hadn't blown my mind, but a former colleague posted a message about something he saw in this town where I live. He goes out for walks pretty early in the morning, and he said that he was walking, and this, where he was walking was fairly close to my house, so that kind of bothers me, and he saw something. It was white, and it was four legs, and it was, you know, large, you know, big dog-sized, but it moved kind of like a cat, and it had a long tail with a puff at the end, and it climbed up partway up a pole and hung on it, you know, just, you know, like you hung on, you know, try to climb the rope in gym class.
Yeah.
You know, had its, you know, front legs and, you know, back legs wrapped around it like that, and it was just staring at him. And he said it wasn't a cat, and it wasn't a dog, but it was hairy and white, and he doesn't have a clue what it was. And I was, for this series that I'm doing about exploring American monsters, in Alabama there's a monster called the White Fang, and that is with an A, because it is Alabama. And descriptions of it are a lot like that. And I, you know, sent him the description, and he's like, "Oh, that's what I saw." So I don't know about blowing my mind, but it kind of freaked me out a little bit because it's, you know, something unidentifiable that other people have seen elsewhere, and it was right here. Yeah, I don't like the stuff that happens in my backyard. That bugs me.
Well, that's your book, though, the other book you wrote.
Yeah, I know. And I maybe shouldn't have done all that research because it kind of freaks me out.
Jim Latica and I have the same opinion here, although slightly different. He says albino sloth. I say just like mangy sloth.
Yeah,
but
it really wasn't moving fast, or it was moving too fast for a sloth.
Oh, wait, he says albino. I'm sorry. He says albino sloth. I was thinking a possum. So my theory is possum on that one.
Well, yeah, possums don't really grow to the size of a big dog. They're about the size of a football.
That's true. And they're pretty, yeah, they're kind of like giant moles. They're really like, they're kind of like weird animals. They're just doing their own thing. They don't ever really, you really sort of interact with them. And if you do, they're kind of like, hey, man, I'm cool. I'm out of here.
Unless you corner one in a garage. Have you ever seen a possum up close when it was pissed at you?
No, I can't say that I have. Have you? You have, then, I take it.
Yeah, the certain marsupials, like I mentioned, the thylacine, which is a marsupial wolf, had the same type of mouth as a possum does. It's got a long snout, and when it opens, the mouth opens a hell of a lot wider than a mouth from any other animal does.
Yeah.
It's freaky as hell. And, they hiss like a cat.
Jesus.
Possums are nasty.
All right. So you don't want to mess with a possum, is what you're saying.
No, don't mess with a possum.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not badger mean, but, they're pretty ugly.
Yeah, Jim Boovard says possums are the evil clowns of the animal world. That sounds about right.
That's a great, it's a great explanation.
So you wrote the fiction book. How was that? You said the first book was really, you know, the original book that you wrote was when you were younger and was sort of not a great thing. How is the new book? Tell me about it. What's it about? What made you decide to write a fiction book? You know, is this a new sort of realm you're going down into, or what?
Well, I've wanted to write novels since I was 10. And I remember telling my parents that, and, you know, they laughed, rubbed my head, and told me to go off and play with my Legos. So, which I probably did. But, I mean, that's something I've always wanted to do. And I never really had time working as a print journalist because, you know, you work 10 hours at a newspaper writing and editing, and when you get home, you just want to have a few beers and watch TV.
Right.
So I never really got I wrote some short stories, but never really got anything of length done. And then here comes my job teaching at a university where I have summers off. So I had more time, and the first number of books that I did were, I wanted to explore things I was interested in, which are shadow people and ghosts and, you know, Bigfoot and time travel and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
And it was nonfiction because, you know, I'm a journalist and that's what journalists do. But I was sitting in an airport, Kansas City, Missouri International Airport, and I was waiting for a plane to Texas, and just ideas started popping into my head, and I just started writing things down, and I had actually a couple of chapters written by the time I got to Austin, but fiction is again something I've always wanted, and I realized that if I didn't do it, if I didn't get my book written and published, I'd regret it later.
Yeah.
So I just I poured through it. Now, what the book's about, and I've had people ask me, where did this idea come from? I've got no freaking idea. Most authors are not going to be able to say, I have no idea.
Hmm.
You know, or most authors are not going to be able to say they have an idea. Most authors don't have a clue.
Yeah.
It just pops in your head. You know, when you're doing dishes or when you're, you know, watching TV or just driving, these ideas just come to you. And for some reason, the idea of a guy who has sex with strange women at funerals popped into my head.
Oh,
I don't know. Maybe it's something I always wanted to do and never got around to. Have you ever sat at a funeral and looked at some chick in black and going, hey, she's pretty hot?
Yeah. Is this like the Will Ferrell kind of idea? Or is it a darker twist? You know, like Wedding Crashers, he's a funeral crasher?
I have never watched Wedding Crashers.
Okay.
I tend not to watch anything with Will Ferrell because I think he is the least funniest human being on the planet.
Wow. That's a bold stance to take.
Yeah, it is, and my wife owns every one of his movies. She loves him, but I cannot stand Will Ferrell.
Wow, so the talking points tonight are Jason Offit wants to kill Bigfoot, he says dousing is bullshit, and Will Ferrell is the worst.
Yes, that's it. That's what you're taking from this tonight, guys. But, yeah, the guy, I wanted to write a nerd novel, because you don't see a lot of novels about nerds. And so this is about a guy named Deaver Dixon, who lives at home with his mom. He's 30 years old, works in IT, plays Dungeons & Dragons every Friday night with his old high school buddies. And the big scene where the climax happens is at a science fiction convention in Kansas City called the Wrath of Khan, C-O-N.
Is that a real thing?
No.
Okay. I'm already buying into the story. I've already suspended my disbelief. Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, and this the guy, nobody knows about what he does at funerals. He just does this as a hobby. And he meets a girl who he hooks up with who has exactly the same hobby as he does. She picks up guys at funerals, and it's then kind of an effed up love story after that.
Jesus, interesting. So how – oh, wow, that's interesting. So the idea just kind of came to you, and you just started writing furiously. Do you have the ending in mind? Does the ending come first, or like how's it all kind of come to you sort of like as an elevator pitch kind of thing?
It depends. I mean, I've got something else that I've done that the ending came to me first before anything else did. But with this, just a couple of scenes on how would you exactly approach somebody at a visitation or a funeral and hit on them.
Hmm.
That's what came to me first.
You'd have, yeah. Interesting. All right.
Well, and part of that also came from a guy I went to college with. His basic philosophy with women was he would walk up to them and say, "Hey, you want to screw?" And he said, 15 times, I'm going to get a slap in the face, but there's that 16th time that works.
I heard that from a college professor. He had a friend who did that, and he said like the same thing.
Yeah. I never tried that out, but he was okay with 15 slaps in the face.
I suppose, yeah. Well, if it pays off at the end, I guess if you gotta really want it. What's the line? Where do you draw the line of how many times you get slapped in the face? I don't know. Interesting. So you're gonna do more fiction, or do you have more ideas? Like that's the thing that interests me, because I've thought about doing fiction and writing some stuff. I have some ideas, but I don't know if I could even stretch them into one long story.
Well, that's the story. I mean, you got ideas, but they have to have. I mean, there's got to be a body to it. There's got to be a story to it. I've got a couple of book ideas that I'm one of them. I've got tons of notes for that. I'll get to that one in a second. But about not having enough information or enough idea for a book.
Yeah.
I just completed a novella. I've changed the name of it. The original name was Matriarchal Nazi Cannibals. Based on a dream that I had.
Oh, wow.
About people who wound up in this small town and found that it was run by a matriarchy of
Nazi cannibals.
People who escaped, of descendants who escaped Nazi Germany after the war, and they were cannibals.
That sounds like a trauma film.
Yeah, well, after I wrote it, I'm like, this could be a movie. This is terrific. And but I only had enough to get about 16,000 words out of it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if I would have stretched it anymore, it would have been too much. So, some ideas are meant for a 2,000-word story, and some are a book.
You know what I'd like to see you try is, have you ever thought about writing like a movie or a play or something?
But I wouldn't have a clue what to do with it afterward.
You would stage it. You're a teacher. You could just, don't they have bulletin boards there? Just put up some flyers, stage it.
I am in the mass media department, and we have students who make student films all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah, that could happen. That could happen.
Take advantage of that free labor.
Yeah. You'd ask about book ideas. I've got it's going to be a fiction, nonfiction book. A lot of it's going to be fiction, but there's a whole lot of nonfiction in it. It's going to be called The Vasectomy Diaries, because I had one of those 7 years ago, and my wife and I have a four-month-old now. I went to the doctor last January when I found out we were expecting, and my body repaired itself. I'm getting really personal here.
I know. So, I knew this story, but I would never ask you about it on the air, so I'm thrilled.
Well, you know, I'll throw it out because I have a superpower.
I know.
My superpower must be getting women pregnant.
Yeah. Well, you have a now, does it hurt when you get kicked in between the legs?
It's not like the testicles were removed.
I know that. I just mean, like, maybe before you were immune to that. I'm being sarcastic, of course.
Yeah, okay. No, it hurts. They're normal, especially now.
They're
yeah,
just
so I'm
super
like Wolverine. I'm like Wolverine down there.
Exactly. You have the crotch of Wolverine.
Yeah. So anyway, the only reason I'm bringing that up is it's going to be a book. I took notes throughout the entire pregnancy about all the weird, funny shit that happened. And I'll give you an example. This is going to be a short scene. When pregnant women get cravings.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife was really, really jonesing really hard for this certain type of pastry. I don't remember if Little Debbie or whoever makes it, but they don't make it anymore. So we were driving to Kansas City, which is about an hour and a half, 2 hour drive, and I stopped at every little place I could find to get one of these, and nobody had it. So I finally bought some donuts, little donuts, and gave them to the kids. And I told my wife, I said, we'll keep looking. So we're driving down the highway, and my wife's like, I've got to have something sweet. Got to have something sweet. Turned around to my son. Could you give me a donut? He's like, sure, Mom, here you go. So she ate the donut. She turned to my daughter, who was seven at the time. She goes, hey, give me a donut. My daughter's like, no. Give me a donut. No, I'm not going to give you a donut. Give me a fucking donut!
That's really happened. Wow.
Yeah, it's really happened. So my daughter gingerly hands a donut to my wife, and everything's fine.
Wow.
But that was hilarious.
Do you get your money back for the vasectomy?
You know what? No, because...
you have to sign something that says it could happen?
Yeah, because the doctor warns you this could grow back. It's rare, but it could happen.
Jeez. Wow. Well, congrats.
Well, thanks. Yeah, being a father at this advanced age means I'll never be able to retire.
Well, think of all the adventures we'll get in working.
Yes, yeah, I got to look at the positives. Yeah, that's great. I'm glad I went there. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah. Well, are you going to get another one, or are you just throwing up your hands at this point?
I'm done talking about my testicles.
You mentioned it first. You mentioned
it first.
I did.
I brought it up, but it was in the vein of this is the next book I'm working on.
Interesting. All right.
But yeah, no. Some guy comes at your junk with a knife.
Hmm.
You don't want that to happen twice in your life.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Now, do you're doing the American Monster series here at Mysterious Universe? Is that sort of the where you're focusing your paranormal energy for the time being?
Right now, until I get through the 50 states, yeah. It's, again, I like monsters.
Yeah.
I like creepy, crawly things in the night. I like things that, you know, are human-like. That's why I really, really have always been fascinated by Bigfoot, because it stands on two legs.
Yeah.
You know, and it walks. And some people, some Bigfoot researchers say that that it talks as well, that they've... You know, heard it repeat things that they've said in the night.
I've heard
that too.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard that a couple times. It's a weird aspect of the Bigfoot thing. Well, this is a weird question, but this isn't like a challenge or anything like that. I'm just kind of intrigued. When do you think you'll wrap up all 50 states?
Probably. I started.
I'm looking at it here. Your first one was February 27th, so you've just begun.
Yeah.
You've only done like three or four so far, so you've got quite the journey ahead of you.
Yeah, it's gonna be December, early January.
All right. Oh, so you think you can do it in a year?
Well, I'm planning on doing one a week.
All right.
50 states, 52 weeks. Yeah, I can do this.
Oh, now it is turning into a challenge.
Yeah.
All right. Well, when you finish that, we want to have you on the show, and we'll do sort of like a tour of American Monsters. We're just beginning the journey here, so it's good that we got you on now before you're like halfway through it.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. There's some nice monsters out there. I'm looking to delving into and it'll be a great conversation. As it always is.
It always is. It's really don't listen to what Bernie said, folks. We know what we're talking about. Well, I haven't had a good jam session in a long time, you know, where I just talk to somebody I'm good friends with and talk for a long time about just anything that we can think of. So I've enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, same here. Usually it's just baseball.
We didn't even touch on baseball. I'll make you talk a little bit about baseball after we say goodbye to the live audience. I'll do 5 minutes of baseball because I'm going to talk to you later on this month anyway for all that. I didn't want to surprise you and be like, what are your picks? Because it's a little early for that. But is there anywhere you could go? Is there anywhere you'd like – if you this is, I don't know if I ever asked you this, but I don't think I asked somebody else this question once. But, you know, if you won the lottery tomorrow and you had to spend it on the paranormal, it's like some kind of weird paranormal lottery. Is there anywhere you'd go or anything you'd do? Like if you had unlimited resources, you know, what would you really like to do?
Wow, that's a great, great question. Go lay in the alleged sarcophagus. I'm saying it's the alleged sarcophagus because it's not a sarcophagus, but it is a box in the king's chamber in the Great Pyramid. You know, that would be an awesome experience. Fly to Easter Island and you know, hug a moai.
Are you allowed to even get into that king's chamber or?
People have, yeah. Okay. You need special permission to. Well, I mean, you get in there, but I think you need special permission to actually lay in the box.
Yeah, they'd probably be like, "Dude, no, you can, sir." And you're like, "I have
out of
to
the
do
box.
It." And you'd be like, "Here's $1 million. Money is no object." Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I've always wanted to go to the pyramids too and check them out. They seem like, I don't know. Well, I was gonna say monumental, but that goes without saying. But they're really amazing.
Yeah, one of the places that I'd like to go just because of the mystery involved is are you familiar? I don't remember the name of the event, but there was a group of skiers, young people back in I think the 50s who were in the Ural Mountains in Russia. And they were climbing up a mountain and they pitched a tent and they disappeared. I mean they didn't come back, and people went out to find them and found that they'd rushed out of the tent and most of them were naked and they ended up dying in the snow and the tent got ripped to pieces and it's a big mystery as to what happened to them. I just kind of like to go there and check out the area.
All right. Well, you are amazing, sir, because that's actually – I was kind of on the fence now, but since you said that, I'm definitely going to do it because I have two awesome episodes in the can for BOA Audio that I taped at the beginning of the year that I haven't rolled out yet. One of them is that case. So we'll make that the next edition of the show, the Dyatlov Pass mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great. Yeah, that is true. I'm really fascinated by that case.
Well, you're going to like it because I read the book that the guy wrote. I forget the name of it, so I'm going to be terrible at plugging it here at the end. But he's I have the book, and we did like 2 hours on it. So, and it's pretty amazing stuff. It's really
all right.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Keith McCloskey is the guy that's going to be on the show. And let me see if I have the name of his book here. Because now I feel bad. That the Dyatlov Pass Incident. No, that's not the name of his book. That's just something I wrote down. But anyway. yeah. A Mountain of the Dead, I think, is the name of the book. And he's going to be on to talk about it next week on the show. So I was on the fence about which one to put out because they're both such good episodes. I was kind of sitting on it and debating it, but since you mentioned it, it seems like the perfect sign that that's the one that we should put out. So that'll be on the next show. Well done, Jason.
I'm glad you called me to be on.
Yeah, that's crazy. I was like grinning from ear to ear as you were describing that because I'm like, oh my God, he has no idea that we have like a 2-hour-plus interview with, with this guy digging deeply into the case. So, yeah, it's a killer show. It's a killer show to follow up a killer show tonight with you, so we're on a roll here. Say something.
All right. Hey, Jesus.
Say something, right. You know, like, hey, you're right, man. This has been great.
Well, Tim, it's always great. You, Tim, you're my favorite interviewer, okay? I love being on your show. You do a great job.
Really? Do you mean that?
I'm serious. I am completely serious.
I'm just messing with you at this point.
Yes, but the thing that I really want to know that I think everybody's itching to find out about is your fire pit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because I saw a great picture on your online of you sitting in the snow.
Yes. They're on my Facebook page. People should go check it out. I should put them up at Banal of America just to get them out there, too, for people that don't use Facebook. But it's pretty awesome. It's actually melted quite a bit this week. So it's not as awesome as it was. But at a time, the walls were five feet plus high of snow and really carved out. I'm sure you've shoveled in your lifetime. When the snow is really deep, you can kind of really do a sharp cut when you're shoveling into it. So it was really like a little room. It was amazing.
Yeah. I've done it. Not to that extent. I mean, we get a lot of snow here in Missouri, but I haven't had anything that high.
Well, it was a cumulative effort. I had to keep going out between every blizzard and keep it. You can't just go out and do it from scratch. Well, I'm sure you could, but you'd be kind of a dummy to do it that way. But if you wait all winter, like I'll probably do it next winter. I don't think we'll get the record amount of snow. But I think I'll do it again because it was so cool. The interesting part was when you're in there and the fire is going, the walls of the structure. Let's go. There's the British lady. We'll keep going on this if we lose the live audience. But the structures, the walls of the structure turn like they get like all crystallized, like they don't just melt outright. And the floor of the little room is just like filled with water because it's like slowly melting the walls down under your feet. So it's a really cool effect.
Which ices up, and the next time you go out there, you bust your ass and, you know, break a knee.
That's the problem, actually, yeah, because you don't want to handle the fire pit can, you know, you can pick it up and move it around. It's not just like it's not like stationary, but you can't really move it around after you've used it. So then you go in the house, it's cold out, you go out the next morning, and now it's frozen to the floor of the little room you made. So it has its pluses and minuses. But it was quite enjoyable. It was really strange to be out there. You really aren't cold at all because you're right next to the fire pit, but you're surrounded by all the snow. It's surreal.
Well, I see what you're missing here, though. It's a perfect opportunity. You could have beer bottles sticking into the snow wall.
I did have beer bottles sticking into the snow wall. So, yeah, there's a lot. They're all strewn throughout the throughout the tops of the walls. I was just careful about the pictures so I didn't make myself look like too much of a lunatic. Well, we're going to lose the live audience in 10 seconds. So thanks to Jim Latica and Jim Vujovic for talking to us in the chat room tonight. And Bernie Mooney, who posted that comment about the genetic modified stuff. That made me laugh. Thanks to all those guys who tuned in. We're still going here in the post show. There's really not much else to talk about here in the post. Do you have any other questions about the fire pit? There's really not much more to say. I mean, it's a fire pit.
Well, have you destroyed evidence in the fire pit?
Not yet. No, no,
okay.
No. Not yet. I've considered it, but, you know. I never even thought of that, actually, so I really haven't considered it. But Bernie Mooney, he did respond, but I don't think he heard your challenge. He said, I know you're just talking in quotes, but I hear the same misinformation all the time from people I respect as smart people, so it drives me nuts. I write about the issue, so I have a genetically modified dog in the hunt. So I don't even remember what we said exactly other than I bet it was that Monsanto's going to kill us all thing you said. I bet
I'm thinking Bernie Mooney works for Monsanto.
That's very possible. Now, I should congratulate you. I want to mention this is sort of an interesting meeting of the minds because we both I promised we'd talk about the baseball at the end, so we'll do a brief chat here because I don't want to blow it all before the baseball special. But you and I share a piece of the title because of how it all went down,
which is awesome.
So
this
now you're
the
two-time champion.
Two-time, yeah. This is I will lord that over others.
Mm. Are you looking forward to the season? I'm afraid to even start talking about this because it's going to blow the baseball special. But just briefly, are you looking forward to the season? Are you excited? There's quite a hangover here in Kansas City.
Yeah, I'm excited, but given this is the given it was like what 38, 39 years between World Series or playoff appearances even.
Yeah.
I'm just reveling in last year, and I've got my fingers crossed that we won't embarrass ourselves this year.
Mm. Well, I'll save the amazing story of our journey through the playoffs last year, because that was like one of the weirdest things that I ever experienced. Just the brief version is that Jason and I, we were in communication throughout the entire playoffs from beginning to end, from the glorious wild card game that started the Kansas City run to the heartbreaking game seven. So it was I thought about putting it into like book form for you in some way to send to you, but then it was like, I don't know if it would read well as a book. It's a lot of just you and me being like, just random complaints or about the announcers and things like that.
Yeah, lots of, oh, he got yoasted in, hey, country breakfast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. There you go, country breakfast. It's like, if you don't know what's going on, you have no idea what we're talking about. So it was a lot
no,
of that.
I'm hungry now.
And folks will be happy to know I tried like hell to convince Jason to name his new kid Yoast after Ned Yoast. I still think it's a great name. I think it's a great name.
Yeah, I know. Tim really did push me. That's her middle name.
Oh,
I lied. I totally lied. It's
I know.
Not.
But yeah, we'll get into all that on the baseball special. But it's been great chatting with you, man. I really do. I enjoy talking to you every time. Like I said, as soon as your name popped into my head, it was like, well, that's the next show. I got to talk to Jason Offa because I haven't talked to him forever, and there's all kinds of stuff to talk about. And you know, we're very similar guys because we keep one foot in the real world and still dip our toe in the paranormal and have sort of the everyman quality that I like in guests and thinkers in this field.
Well, and which is one of the, I mean, there are a couple of reasons why I've kind of taken a step back a little bit from the paranormal, but one of them is the people who don't keep a foot in the real world. There are quite a few of those out there, and they frankly kind of scare the hell out of me.
Yeah, the people who are like solely into the paranormal or just...
Are way too in it to the point that, you know, logic totally escapes them.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, I don't know how many people I've run into that, you know, are firmly convinced that they've, you know, been abducted by extraterrestrials, which is fine, okay? If that could have happened. I have no complaint about that with you whatsoever. But if you can also remote view, if you can also, you know, talk to ghosts, have seen Bigfoot, you know, and have sat on JFK's lap, you know, then you know, my believability factor has just completely been shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have a lot of problems with that, too, in the sense, you know, Facebook's like a cesspool of weirdness in a lot of ways, and people, you know, personalize weirdness. Where you get people who are like who say they're hybrids and stuff like that. It's just maddening. It's like,
yeah.
you're not a hybrid. I'm sorry. I hate to burst your bubble, but you're not a hybrid.
Well, and then there are so many people out there who are just obviously full of shit. Richard Hoagland, his early stuff about Mars, I really respect that early stuff. But when he knew he had to move on to different topics and he started finding, glass bases on the moon and every rock that you know, a Martian, Martian probe saw was, you know, a piece of a machine. It's like, no, dude, it's a rock.
Yeah.
You're really reaching for it. You're just trying to keep your name out there. Shut up already. You're, you know, losing all credibility.
What's going on over there? Are you cooking, making tea?
I've got a problem with the furnace in my office.
Oh, Jesus.
And every once in a while it starts, because it's the campus, all the heat is run on steam. And there's some problem with my furnace, and every once in a while it starts moaning at me.
Oh, you're on campus now, huh?
Yeah.
Any big parties going on?
It's a dry campus.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so any parties that are happening are off campus.
Any frat houses in the area?
Yeah, all of them are off campus, but there are a couple within. But yeah, a few of them within, you know, throwing distance.
Nice. Must be nice though. I mean, but there's a lot to do in a college sort of area.
Well, and it's a small town, but it's given the size of the town, it's it's a really smart town, considering all the PhDs who live here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the people to hang out and talk to are pretty fascinating. And, you know, and given the universities here, we have I had dinner with a New York Times best-selling author last semester who was in town to speak. We've had, like, Gandhi's grandson came here to talk.
Wow.
An Apollo astronaut, I don't remember which one, but Apollo astronaut was here.
Not one of the big ones, though.
It wasn't one of the big ones. Edgar Mitchell didn't come here. But still, he was an Apollo astronaut.
Right. Did he walk on the moon?
No.
Oh, that must suck.
Yeah. But still, he was an Apollo astronaut.
Yeah, still.
And still, I mean, stuff like this. Stuff like this comes to campus, and it's, you know, given the town's like 12,000 people, a lot of pretty cool stuff happens here.
Yeah, I bet you at some point this year you'd have the opportunity to see a barbershop quartet.
Maybe so. I've never seen one of those on campus. Although, back in the 50s, the Von Trapp family singers were here.
Colleges usually have that kind of thing, so I figure it'll pop up eventually if it hasn't yet.
Barbershop, I'll keep my eyes open and probably not go listen to them, but that's all right.
Yeah.
There's the fourth talking point, off at Dist Barbershop Quartets.
Yes. Barbershop Quartet, no thanks, says Jason Offit.
Yes.
All right, man. Well, let me plug the books here before I let you go. The new one, How to Kill Monsters Using Common Household Items. Also, A Funeral Story. And then the previous books we've talked about here on the show, Darkness Walks and What Lurks Beyond and Across a Corn-Swept Land. Are you going to do I thought you were going to do a book about your trip to England.
The problem I ran into is I guess I spent too much time wandering historic sites and sitting in pubs because I got it written up and it's like 20,000 words short.
Oh, man, really? That's it? Is that a lot or
yeah.
A little? I can't tell.
Oh, that's not that. I've got about 40,000 words written into it. It's still on my agenda. I just haven't got it finished yet.
I don't remember if we talked about your trip to Stonehenge or not. I remember I told you I mooned Stonehenge, so I figure we must have talked about it, but I don't recall. What did you think of it? It's kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Oh yeah, which is terrific. I mean, I'm glad it's in the middle of nowhere. Not there's not a Walmart right next door.
That's true.
it'd be a bit of an issue. So I mean, the location was terrific. Driving out to Stonehenge, being in the middle of nowhere, you get to see some pretty quaint towns, and the scenery was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
The fields were filled with what we call canola, what they call rapeseed.
Yay.
Okay, they don't have that great a PR, I guess,
yeah.
In the agriculture industry in England. But, yeah, Stonehenge, it's one of those things I've wanted to see since I was a little kid. And when you talk to people who feel that way about something, as soon as they get to it, they're like, it's smaller than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it's like don't meet your heroes.
Right, and this wasn't. This was everything and more than I'd hoped it would be. I was just amazingly impressed.
Nice.
There was a witch there who got out of the car. She had a little. She was in witch garb and she had a staff with a goat's head on the end of it, and she was talking to small children. And yeah,
yikes.
Now, a little unnerving.
Two things come to mind. I'll let you get going soon. I promise. I don't know about you, but I went there in the year 2000. I presume it's the same case now, but you can't touch Stonehenge anymore. You used to be able to, like, walk around it, walk through it, you know, really have the run of the place. Now it's like they really don't want you anywhere. They don't want you near enough to touch the rocks or anything, which is kind of
funny. No, same thing. You can't,
yeah.
Unless you're a druid, you can't get beyond the rope to go up and walk around the stones.
Yeah, which is disappointing. And when I went there, there was, like, nothing as far as, it was like a tiny little thing that you could go in and get a little bit of information. But have they upgraded that? Is there a food court? I think I know I asked you this question before. I'm just interested.
Yes, and there is. There was a place to get sausages and a couple other types of food. And there were just starting on a tourist center. So they're gonna have a big center for tourists at some point. But I was really impressed.
Nice.
And the reason they keep it chained off is this happened just a few days ago in Italy.
Oh, someone scratched their name in the Colosseum, that whole
thing? In the Colosseum. Who the hell does that? Oh, wait, it was Americans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, people are dumb. Did you hear this weird story, speaking of which? This was like a Cambodian temple, a temple in Cambodia where first a couple people, this is ironic because I told you I mooned Stonehenge, but it was like a couple people like pulled their pants down and took their pictures in this Cambodian temple and they were like arrested and thrown out of Cambodia. But then the same thing happened like 2 weeks later. It was like, I don't think the people had heard about it, the other people that did it too. It was like, what is compelling people to do this?
I don't know. People do stuff like this all the time. I went to San Antonio a few years ago, and this guy got arrested. It was a federal charge for pissing on the Alamo.
Oh, my God. Was that a political statement? Must have been.
No, he was drunk.
Oh,
he was like, I'm going to piss on the Alamo.
That sounds like something I'd do.
It's a federal offense, dude.
Yeah, I know. Thank you for telling me that.
Yeah.
On that
Things
note,
you learn on Banal of America.
Exactly. We want to leave you folks with one last nugget of knowledge. So those are the books: Darkness Walks, What Lurks Beyond, Across a Corn-Swept Land, Haunted Missouri, Paranormal Missouri, and again, the two new books, How to Kill Monsters Using Common Household Items and A Funeral Story. You can find all those on Amazon and all the places you can buy books pretty much nowadays. And you can find Jason on Facebook. He's got a page there, an author page and a regular page. So look him up. That's it.
All right.
Thank you for
Mr.
coming
Banal,
on the show, dude. I appreciate it.
Thank you for the invite. It's always a pleasure talking to you, sir. And then, I was serious. You're my favorite interviewer.
No, I appreciate that, man. I contrary to how some folks might think, I put a lot of work into these shows. So, you know, I like to make sure that I cover as much as possible and really make a connection with the guest. That's really, at the end of the day, what I really strive for is to make a connection with the guest. So.
And you know the point you made a connection is when you brought up the story of the guy with the camera in his ass.
Exactly. So you are free to go. I'm going to throw the plugs in here, and I'm going to call it a night myself. So thank you again, my friend, and we'll talk soon for the baseball special.
I can't wait, Tim, and we're going to have another triumphant year.
I look forward to it, buddy. Have a good night.
All right. You too. Bye.
How about that furnace, folks? You can hear it now in the background. If you're just listening to the program for the first time ever, this is Banal of America. There goes Jason. If you're just listening to the program for the first time ever, this is Banal of America Audio. You can find out more from us at banalofamerica.com. Pretty simple. Just punch in B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. Much like Jason, we are on Facebook as well. Just punch in Banal of America on Facebook. What you just heard was a two-hour-plus conversation with Jason all the way over in Missouri, and it was live for all the folks who want to tune in live, and that stuff costs us money, folks, so if you could help us out, that would be greatly appreciated. There's two ways to do so. You can make a donation via PayPal. Just head on over to Banal of America and click the PayPal button. You can also make a P.O. Box donation. The address for that can be found also at Banal of America. I've already given away what the next edition of BOA Audio will be. That is Keith McCloskey talking about his book, Mountain of the Dead. The Dyatlov Pass incident, folks. Crazy, crazy stuff. It's really an amazing conversation. Mountain of the Dead, the Dyatlov Pass incident. That's why I thought it was that. Yes. Really an amazing conversation. I absolutely devoured the book and loved it. And anyone who listens to this program should know that when I read a book and I really love the book, we usually get an amazing conversation out of the guest. And that's what happened when I talked to Keith McCloskey back in February. So we're going to roll that out to folks on the next edition of BOA Audio. And since it's pre-taped and I've settled in on what I'm going to do, I'll be rolling that out to folks. What is today? March 11th. Definitely next week. Maybe early in the week, maybe Tuesday. Who knows? I can't make a prediction on that, but it'll definitely come at you next week. Keith McCloskey, Mountain of the Dead, the Dyatlov Pass incident. What else? I know I promised I was going to do listener feedback, but I didn't ever get around to writing anything down for that. So I don't actually have any listener feedback this week, but I'll try and bring it back eventually, I promise. But share your thoughts on the show. I got a lot of good feedback on last week's edition with the host of Skeptico. I still can't say his name, Alex. Sakiris. That sounds about right. Got a lot of great feedback on that. I hope folks enjoyed that episode. Some people thought it was kind of polarizing, but I didn't get a lot of hate mail, which is good. So I think the people that hated it probably just didn't write to me. So I don't want to encourage them to either, so don't write to me if you hated it. But good feedback for the most part on that episode. And I think people are going to really love the Dyatlov Pass episode coming up on the next edition of VOA Audio. And again, huge thanks to Jason Offit. Dropped everything to come on the program once I had the spark in my mind that we needed to get him back on the show. So enormous thanks to him. Always enjoy talking to him. It really is like a couple of guys sitting at the bar, just letting the conversation take us wherever it may go. And on that note, thank you to all the folks who tuned in live. Thank you to all the folks right now who are listening via MP3. Thanks to all the hardcore BOA audio listeners, the folks who have been with us from the very beginning, and the newcomers, the people who have just been listening for a little while. Maybe this is their first ever episode. Maybe this is like their 12th show, and they're just digging into the archives fast and furious and listening to all these past episodes. Welcome to the party, my friends. This is Banal of America Audio. Thank you for your enduring support of the program to the hardcore listeners, and thank you once again for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.